my first time seeing the three of you sing together was last fall at IBMA. But when did you meet? And let's establish that much.
We met almost exactly 5 years ago at a music camp and workshop called Common Ground on the Hill in Westminster, Maryland. And we were all teaching various pieces of old-time music. I was teaching banjo, and Sam was teaching fiddle, and Marcy was teaching mandolin and guitar. And we were all in a bunch of jam sessions together. And in fact, Sam and I were assigned to lead a jam session together. And that's when I found out that behind the scenes, he was very good friends with a lot of good friends of ours and had hung out and played music with a lot of them. But I think the real magic moment for Marcy and I was hearing Sam in the evening concert when, in addition to his incredible chops and love of old-time music, we heard his songwriting. And particularly when we heard the song Ain't We Brothers coming out of a 20-year-old, we went, this guy is wise beyond his years, elegant in his ability to take a story and put it into an incredible song. And initially, really what we wanted to do was help Sam make his first album. And that...
Because you all have a history as producers.
We have a history as producers. And Sam, I remember saying, well, what are you going to do about making an album? He said, well, I'm thinking about it. And I said, well, think about whether or not you would let me produce it pro bono. And we, Marcy and I, both are very big believers in paying it forward. There's a number of artists and bands that we've produced pro bono with the understanding that they're going to turn it around and do something for somebody else down the line. And Cane Mill Road is one of those bands. They're now coming out with their second album. But Sam, you know, Sam's paying it forward all the time anyway. And I'm very proud of that album. And we worked on another album with Sam and Tyler Hughes. But in the meantime, we were just becoming better and better friends and playing more music together for the fun of it. And really, the centerpiece of this band is we play music together for the fun of it and the love of it. And the Shout and Shine CD that we just put out is Kathy and Marcy's 47th CD. But we feel like there's an equal contribution amongst the three of us. And it's not easy for someone else to come into a tight duo. Marcy and I met exactly 38 years ago, and we've been playing together for 35 full time. So it's not easy for somebody to find where the space is between the two voices and whatever two instruments we pick up. And what we found was that Sam did it effortlessly, and so the harmonies are right there, and the commitment to social justice is right there. But at the same time, the love of sitting around and just cranking out a bunch of fiddle tunes that people can dance to is right there.
Sam, what are your memories of this coming together?
I was so excited to play music and spend time with Kathy and Marcy because I've been an admirer of their music for a long time. When I was in school at Berea College, I went to hear Kathy and Marcy perform with the Real World String Band in Lexington, Kentucky, and I loved hearing them and their musical chemistry, and I have always admired Kathy and Marcy and their political stance as musicians and being welcoming to all people and advocating for that through their music. And so I was really excited when we all came together at Common Ground and had a chance to play music together and get to know each other. And I call them my sheroes because that's how I feel about them. My friend Gay at Deg Balola coined that term, sheroes. But it's true, and I feel very fortunate to get to play music and learn from them because I think Kathy and Marcy have both been real students of traditional music from a lot of the real masters, you know, like Patsy Montana and Ola Bell Reed, and that lineage is apparent in their music as well as their own personal expression. I admire the way that they have taken these traditions and breathed life into them and reapplied them in meaningful ways.
Well, one of the themes of the record and one of the things we're going to talk about is diversity and this wave of this sort of movement, especially among younger people in the bluegrass and folk world, to assert a sort of ethic of inclusion and diversity in these musics that have been associated in many ways and for reasonable historic reasons with white Christian and Southern or conservative kinds of populations. But one of the things that bluegrass and traditional music and folk music have done well that you guys are reflecting here is a generational bridge. You know, in a sense, that's not new. So I'd love to hear you talk about that and how maybe that comes through on this record or your project.
Well, the generational bridge is something that we are used to. We played a lot with Mike Seeger and Ola Bell Reed, who were humanists. You know, they really did the right thing with inclusion. Ola Bell spoke up for civil rights, and so did Mike Seeger. Gay rights, Ola Bell once said, people forget that love is love. And so we kind of lose track that that generation was so caring and thoughtful and giving. We also worked with Pete Seeger, who did not really feel like a peer to me. He felt like grandpa. You know, he was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. It was a joy to work with him, but he was all about inclusion too, which would be no surprise. But with Ola Bell and her husband Bud and Mike Seeger, you know, they took us in, and obviously we were younger, but we all felt like peers. And that's the way we feel with Sam. It doesn't say, I mean, you can say he's an old soul, but what we really have is a melding of the spirits at a really basic human level. So when people maybe hold up Kathy's and my generation as examples of inclusion, they may not know that the generation before us was really the same way and very outspoken about it.
We last talked at last fall's IBMA, where Shout and Shine was an event for the second year, a showcase, a party, and a movement. What do you think has, if you reflect now, we're here 7-8 months on from that that weekend. Anything changed or felt different in this time since we last hooked up?
I think that the Shout and Shine Showcase, which was sponsored by the Bluegrass Situation and by Pinecone, but during the International Bluegrass Music Association week, I think that showcase has helped catapult to the forward a movement of inclusion, diversity in bluegrass. And for instance, within the last couple of weeks, there's been an announcement from IBMA, International Bluegrass Music Association, of their embracing of the Bluegrass Pride movement and the Handsome Ladies. And I think that, you know, it was also very obvious at IBMA in last year's keynote with Rhiannon Giddens, where the keynote speaker was an African-American woman who don't play a lick of bluegrass, but understands the heritage and where bluegrass came from, and has stood for equality and inclusion all along. And I think IBMA is catching up, so to speak. It's taken a long time, because initially bluegrass was a very different constituency, but even the word bluegrass, even though I'm, as a traditional musician, I understand what hardcore old traditional bluegrass is. But the way people use the word now is a whole different thing. And 20 years ago, if you used the word to include anything that has a banjo, people would have given you a hard time. Now, a little bit less so. And part of that has to do with the fact that even that there are fewer hardcore traditional bands and more bands that are bringing more traditions into their music to diversify it more. And I think the bluegrass world is catching up to accepting all these influences. You know, there is an Irish influence to bluegrass music. There's a Scottish influence to bluegrass music. There's an African influence to bluegrass music. And so when a bluegrass band wants to play an actual Irish tune, instead of somebody saying, hey, that ain't bluegrass, now they're saying, hey, that's part of where bluegrass comes from. It fits. And I think what we're seeing is a movement where more things fit and more people fit. And I think it's very important for us all to do whatever we can to make everybody fit wherever they want to be. So bluegrass is catching up to that.
Sam, you felt any shift in the winds or anything that's happened in these last 7 or 8 months that seems to validate the promise of last fall's IBMA?
Well, I continue to see the bluegrass situation, the media outlet being a huge voice for roots music in a broad, inclusive sense. And it's very community oriented, and I really appreciate their advocacy. And Justin Hiltner, being part of organizing the Shout and Shine showcases the past couple years. And that opened my mind tremendously to read a lot of their coverage of what they consider to be roots music, and as that continues to be a delightful way to discover new artists and to see, but to keep our community together, I really appreciate them.
Can you offer background on the phrase Shout and Shine, since you did choose it as a title and a title track of this album?
Well, when Justin Hiltner invited us to be part of the Shout and Shine showcase, for a couple weeks I kind of walked around going, I wonder if they have a theme song. And I called him up, do y'all have a theme song? He said, no. I said, okay, I'm going to work on that. Now, just because you want to write a song doesn't mean that the song happens. But I'm going to say that I was kind of lucky one day. The stars and the moon and the sun all aligned. And I worked on the song, ran it by Marcy. She had a few suggestions, tweaked a little bit, sent it off to Justin, said, hey, I'm thinking about this. And he loved it. And of course, we wanted to bring Sam into it. In terms of titling our album Shout and Shine, Sam also has a fabulous original song on there called Moonshine. So we have both ends of the spectrum here. One song about everybody shines and one song about what you can drink. And we all like our moonshine a fair amount, so what the hey. And maybe you want to talk about your moonshine
song. I was
certainly
going to ask about that, because you you write about it with a sort of a clinical intimacy that would suggest that you either did a lot of research.
Well, I have done a lot of research, I will say, but very informal research. But I had the great pleasure a few years ago of writing a folk opera with Silas House, who's a great novelist and playwright and poet from Kentucky. And so he's my buddy and another mentor of mine. And the Southern Foodways Alliance commissioned us to write a folk opera. And they asked if we could write about the history of corn in the American South. And so Silas wrote this great series of monologues told from a diverse group of characters talking about the importance of corn in Southern culture, from the Cherokee folks, and our story starts around the time of the Trail of Tears, but moving all the way up to the present day. The last monologue is a gay man in the contemporary South speaking. So I had the easiest job in the world, because I just had to write songs that follow those monologues that Silas wrote. And so one monologue is a lady moonshiner named Glory, who's really fierce, and played by my friend Deborah Payne. And so I wrote the song Moonshine to follow that monologue, and listened to some oral histories of moonshiners and thought about moonshiners that I know and wrote the song. It was really fun to sing it with Kathy and Marcy.
Another one I wanted to ask about was Welcome Table, a new song by you, Sam, but seems to have been done with a really ancient form and a feeling for some pretty old, an old approach.
Well, thank you. That's what I was hoping it would sound like. That song, Welcome Table, is also from that folk opera In These Fields, and it follows the story of a newly freed slave woman talking about how she wants to stay on the land where she was raised. And so I used all lyrics from traditional African-American spirituals, one called Honey in the Rock, which was collected by a guy in Candy Carowan on the South Carolina Sea Islands. And then All My Trials, another great spiritual, is in there, Gospel Plow. And I just wrote the tune and sort of put it together. But the theme of it all comes from a spiritual called River of Jordan, which has a line, I'm going to eat at the welcome table one of these days. You know, it's about equality. And I love those old spirituals. I think their poetry is so concise and so real. And so I loved writing that. But I didn't write hardly a word of it. I just wrote the melody.
Marcy, as we wrap up here, could you just give a sense of what led to the other repertoire? You tapped Alice Gerard, you tapped Maybelle Carter. You looked widely for the majority of the songs on here are folk covers, but songs that are not overly familiar whatsoever. I'm learning a lot of songs from this record. So
the other songs on the album, the song by Alice Gerard, is something we're very proud of. Alice and the work that she has done. She's another person who has been for inclusion of all types for so many years. You know, I don't know if I should say this, but she's 80 now, or
no, she's 84.
She's 84 now, and it's hard to believe because she looks better than me, and I'm not telling my age, but it's quite a bit younger than that. But her writing has always been right to the heart, the soul of country. And a lot of it is topical. And there's a song called Closer to the Light. The lyrics were written by our friend Jim Bailoff. And that's a song that has meant a lot to me, especially in the last 3 years. I loved it when I first heard it. But I'm a cancer patient now. And I've been through quite a bit. And sometimes music just keeps you going, able to take another step. And whether that you're celebrating a joyous experience or a difficult experience, it's music that speaks to us in our daily lives and really helps us. So I'm really appreciative of that song. It's a very kind of lighthearted song, but it's called Closer to the Light. It's like every day I aim to get closer to the light. And I'm going to pass to Kathy.
You know, the Alice Gerard song, Sweet South Anna River, was based on her touring a lot with Elizabeth Cotton, the woman who wrote Freight Train, Going So Fast. And Elizabeth Cotton told Alice Gerard that when she died, she didn't want to be put in a cold, dark grave all by herself. She wanted to be laid out with wildflowers in her hair and a silvery gown, and she wanted to float down the river and have all of her friends wave goodbye to her. And Alice wrote that song. She was driving up to Washington, D.C., where her kids live, and she passed a sign that said Sweet South Anna River, and she said, that's it. And wrote that song in Elizabeth Cotton's honor. But on the album, it's connected to an Elizabeth Cotton song called Babe, It Ain't No Lie. And I love that song. We all love that song. Elizabeth Cotton was 12 years old when she made that song up. And it was a protest song. She was 12 years, you know, she started playing guitar very young. She taught herself how to play left-handed and upside down. And apparently a neighbor of hers, a next-door neighbor, had accused Libba, as her nickname became, of picking flowers from her garden. And complained to Libba's mom that Libba had picked these flowers. Libba swore she hadn't done it, but kids typically get blamed for stuff. And so she was grounded for 2 weeks. All she was allowed to do was her chores and not leave the house. And she'd sit on the porch every day and pick on the guitar, and she made up this melody, and then she made up these lyrics that were, one old woman in this town keeps a-telling her lies on me. Wish to the Lord that woman would die, keeps a-telling her lies on me. Well, all that happened is that woman was sitting on her front porch next door overhearing this nice melody and probably these lyrics she couldn't really hear. She invited Libba over to her house for chocolate chip cookies. She said, if you'll come sing that song in my kitchen, I'll make you some homemade chocolate chip cookies. And it was like, here's this woman making up to Libba Cotton, here's Libba Cotton singing this protest song about that woman in her kitchen at the age of 12. Well, that's right down the alley of Fink, Marx, or Gleaves.
That is the coolest story, because I grew up in just down the road from Chapel Hill,
right,
where Libba Cotton was,
and she was from Carver,
a hero, and we got to know about her. Last question I'll put to Sam. I felt like this record, as I listened to it, I began to think of it as, for some people out there, and I think inevitably for somebody it will be, the first folk record they'll ever hear. Like, this could shape somebody's notion of what folk music is, American folk music is. What if, like, what would you say about it if that was the case?
Wow. I would say that what I love about what Kathy and Marcy have always done is honoring the diverse influences of folk and traditional music. And I think we in particular have chosen songs that have the spirit of folk music being meaningful, you know, being applied to like contemporary social issues, but also the spirit of the music serving as a tool for people to enjoy life and to lift themselves out of hard times, which we are certainly in. And that is what I want to keep striving towards as a folk musician, is how can we lift our spirits with the music, which has always been, I think, its main purpose, but then also discuss what's happening around us and how we can work together to build a more positive future. But I think that the joy of us all playing together, I hope that it's written into the record, because I certainly feel it when we play together.